Today in the EU, new EU election insights with polls, projections, and political dynamics. With only a bit more than a month to the European parliamentary elections, polls are focusing on the performance of the political groups, the seats they may get in the parliament, and on what is worrying EU citizens. With anticipation for a higher voter turnout than previous years, EU citizens appear more aware and engaged than ever with EU affairs. Hello and welcome. I am Evgeori, and this is Today in the EU. To get a better understanding on the new data from our polling partner Europe Elects, we have with us Max Griera. Hi, Max. Welcome back to the studio.
Hello, Evie. Very happy to be here again.
So we invited you here to talk about the one thing that we both love, polls and numbers. We've received the predictions from our polling partner Europe Elects. We usually keep an eye on these predictions. So what do we see this time?
Well, I think we're reaching this point that we have so many projections, we can start...
We can start predicting the future.
It's true. I mean, we have projections every 2 weeks, so sometimes the changes are not that big. But in any case, what I was going to say is that we're seeing already which trends will set the campaign. We're seeing also in which countries the key campaign battles will take place for the seats. And of course, we're seeing still some interesting developments at the national level.
What kind of developments?
We see how, for example, in Germany, the CDU or the Socialists go up, go down again, go up, go down again. So we see there how there's this battle in a way. Also with the Greens, they went down, then they recovered again, now they go down again. So like what I'm trying to say here is that in big countries such as Germany, France, or Spain, or Romania, it's where the campaign will decide the final number of seats at the EU level, because it's where a 1%, 2% change can really determine a seat change at the European level.
Mm-hmm. Nothing is set in stone yet.
Nothing is set in stone at all. However, we do see a tendency here. So, of course, I mean, EPP will be the first, S&D will be the second, probably more or less with the same seats they had now. While what is true, once again, I think we talked about it already, we see how the battle for the third place is really, really the undecided issue. We see how this constantly changed in the last projections. It was Renew third again in the projections now. Let me check. It's Renew and ID, both scoring 84 seats. But again, this constantly changes. So we'll see. And of course, ECR could also become the third force if ultimately Fidesz, the Hungarian ruling party, joins.
Giorgia Meloni commented on Viktor Orban's desire to join the ECR during the summit in Brussels. Stating that it's not a current debate, but may arise post-European elections.
So let's keep an eye closer there.
Now that you're mentioning Hungary and Fidesz and the numbers on your papers, from your coverage, it also seems that there is a lot of unrest there. What happened?
Well, basically, more than what happened with Fidesz, I would say what happened in the opposition of Fidesz. So we saw how, due to a scandal, like Judith Varga, the former Minister for Justice of Hungary, had to resign from all her posts. She was going to be the lead candidate, for example, for the European elections. Then, based on that, her ex-husband, Peter Magyar, started this campaign against Fidesz. He ultimately also published some records, recorded secretly, some records of chats of him with his ex-wife, in which basically the ex-wife, the former Minister of Justice, was talking about how high-ranking Fidesz officials would have, you know, tried to meddle with judicial cases and corruption, pretty much. So this really gave Peter Magyar the platform to start his own political movement against Fidesz.
Úgy, ahogy eddig volt. Mondjuk el a regnáló hatalomnak,
Let's say it out loud that nothing can go the way it was before. Let's tell the ruling power that the government must look into the eyes of the people and take legal and political responsibility for the mistakes they have made, and even more for the sins they have committed, said Peter Magyar, speaking at the protests against Viktor Orbán at the end of March.
So using the momentum from interviews he gave on the recordings, criticizing the government, because he was an insider of Orbán's government. So basically, yeah, he's bringing to light all these dirty politics behind the scenes that usually we wouldn't be able to see. So basically what he did now is he has created, he has taken over an existing party because of, you know, how administration works. Their deadline to register parties was gone, but instead he took an existing one and you know, made it his.
Wait, just to give some context on this, right? What was the reason Judith Varga decided to step down from her role?
What happened is that the Hungarian president, Katalin Novak, resigned first amid growing pressure because she decided a while ago to pardon a man implicated in a sex abuse scandal. And basically what happened is that Varga, as a justice minister, had to sign off these pardons. So indeed, she was scapegoated in a way. Mm-hmm. She felt the responsibility to resign because of this.
Okay, so now we understand the specifics of the party and how Peter Magyar became one of the people to look at for these elections. But maybe we can still clarify what is the connection between these polls and Hungary.
Well, yeah, we introduced the topic because we see how, well, Magyar created, took over this party. He registered it to run for the European elections. And new polls coming in from Hungary, taken over by Europelex or polling provider and aggregated all together, shows how indeed this new party, this new political figure, Magyar, has managed to scoop support because it's projected now to have 3 seats. What's interesting to see here is that while Magyar has positioned himself in a position to Orbán to really, you know, win, to overcome Fidesz, we see how actually Fidesz is completely unchanged their seats for the European elections. They had 10. They've been having 10 already for a while, and they still have 10 projected seats. While we see that the support taken over by Magyar has affected parties from the oppositions, like the socialists, for example.
So it really isn't about battling with Fidesz. It's more about positioning themselves in the political arena by stealing seats from other opposition parties then.
Yes, exactly. And in this sense, also, Fidesz is completely unbothered by Magyar. At least they portray to be unbothered. They say, oh, well, another one that tries to oppose us. Let's see how that ends.
And we already said that this episode is all about polls and data, since we also seen the data from the Eurobarometer, the very last before the EU elections. What is the Eurobarometer exactly?
So the Eurobarometer is this EU-wide survey that the institutions do regularly to track public opinion across the 27 member states. It's been done since 1973, and it's pretty useful because it really surveys Europeans on a wide range of topics. In this case, of course, because of the elections, it has focused on the elections. Yeah.
Now that we got that out of the way, what is the included data and why is it important to talk about this?
Well, first of all, it's important because, as I was saying, we have elections in a month, more or less. So it's interesting to see what trends there are out there. Also, it's the most comprehensive poll out there on the topic. For this poll, they have interviewed 26,000 people between February and March. So it's quite comprehensive. It's important for different reasons, for the parties and politicians, because they can get a sense of what issues they should campaign on. In this sense, we can see in this data what Europeans are truly worried about. So we can, you know, get a sense of what people are worried of what's the feeling among citizens. So, for example, an example that comes to mind is while a lot of parties feel like migration could be very important for the elections, this Eurobarometer shows that actually it's not true, because it came, I think, the 7th most important issue for Europeans at like 24% behind other topics.
And what was the first topic on the list?
The first one is defense, actually, which apparently it's the first time that it makes it to the top of the list. It's preceded first by fighting poverty, and then as third is supporting public health. So it's quite interesting in this sense, these Eurobarometers, to see to which extent the policy by the institutions is connected to the worries by Europeans. So in this sense, we did, there's a connection at the moment. We see right now, of course, Ukraine is a very hot topic. Also the Middle East, it's a very important topic at the moment. And we see that reflected in EU citizens' worries and priorities.
It is time for the European awakening on defense and security, because there is so much at stake here. Our freedom and our prosperity depend on our security. And this is why it is time for Europe to step up on defense. It is time for Europe to step up on security,
said last week Commission President Ursula von der Leyen at the European Defense and Security Summit.
And this is a trend that we've seen already in other Eurobarometers since Russia's war in Ukraine started. So probably we will have more, more to come in this sense.
Last election saw an impressive voter turnout, one of the highest in a long time. Can we expect that to be the case for this time as well?
Well, apparently, yes, according to the Eurobarometer. The latest data is that 71% of Europeans said that they would be likely to vote. So more or less we can say, let's say, yeah, that the turnout, the projected turnout would be 71%. In December, the last Eurobarometer we had, the rate was 68. So we see, you know, a bit of an increase. So indeed, we can expect to have a bigger turnout.
Why is that?
Because we see how the EU more and more, especially during these 5 years, has had a more increased role in topics that directly affect people, right? So, for example, COVID-19 or now the war in Ukraine, like people are very aware of these issues and are very aware what role the EU has and to what extent this role is very important. So they're becoming aware that their vote actually matters and will go somewhere where things that they're worried about will be addressed. But maybe actually I also brought some data on all the turnout.
Yeah, please.
Since we started European Parliament elections. So we started in 1979 with 61.99%. So that was good. But then it started falling through the years until reaching an all-time low in 2014.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And that's the turnout, recent, huh?
Yeah. Well, 10 years ago.
Yeah.
The turnout then, it was 42.6%, which is really low. But then, indeed, in 2019, we saw a recovery. It went back to 50.6%. So now, if these projections for the turnout of 68-71% really crystallize and come true, that would be, I think, a big victory for the institutions and the EU project as a whole.
And Max, you have less than 30 seconds to send a message to our listeners. What will you say?
Well, as all politicians that I interview say, we won't know anything until we have the results.
Thank you, Max, for sharing with us the data and explaining what they actually mean. I am Evi Chiori, and this was Euractiv's Today in the EU podcast. Visit Euractiv to stay on top of the latest news. Sign up for our podcast newsletter. If you haven't subscribed or followed us yet, you can find us on all streaming platforms. Also, make sure to leave a review on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Your reviews help us a lot to spread the word about our content. This episode was produced by Nicoleta Ionta and myself. Thank you for tuning in. We will be with you again tomorrow morning. As part of our commitment to accuracy, inclusion and transparency, Euractiv is part of the Trust Project.